Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Nutrition Network. And today we have something slightly different, which is, and we used to do it back in the old days, which is practitioner focus. So instead of having education sessions with our lovely sponsors and other education sessions all about kind of supplements in effect, what about the actual practical aspects of actually running a clinic and using some of the tools that we've put together to really solve problems that we are ordinary patients have? So today we've got a little treat in store. We have Kate Waters here, who actually runs an intimate health clinic. And so we're going to talk a little bit about the microbiome of the nether regions. Are we not?
We are.
Okay. So, Kate, tell us a little bit about you. Tell us where are you operational from?
Sure. So I'm operational from Dorset. I used to live in London, but we moved out of London when I got pregnant with my child. So about 5.5, nearly 6 years ago. And I was pretty much almost 100% online once we moved. And so COVID obviously pushed that into 100%. So I actually see clients from all around the world, including America and not so much Australia because of the time difference. But, you know, if we can fit it into time scheduling, I see people pretty much everywhere, but the majority in the UK and
so that was interesting. So the old COVID, in effect, you were a bit COVID ready before it came. Yes. So you didn't have, but presumably because Dorset's quite, you know, it's a quite a wide catchment area in effect. So if you were trying to run a clinic just from Dorset, local people, it might be a bit tricky. Was that your thinking?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if I there's intimate health issues with women across the board everywhere, but in terms of people wanting to go down the natural health route with it, it's a lot easier if people can tap into you from wherever they are. And I found that being online, doing telemedicine, as it were, is actually telemedicine. That's not what it is at all, is it? But, you know, being online with Zoom is not, you know, there's not much you miss out on. There's a small little bit of interaction that's, I think, is missed, but the majority of it works really well. I still seem to be able to get very good relationships going with clients, and I see them very regularly. I see people for 3 months. And they do every week to start off with, and then every other week for the second 2 months, because the type of people I'm seeing are in quite chronic situations. They're in a lot of pain. They've come to the end of the road with conventional medicine. Doctors are telling them they can't help them anymore, or they are working with London clinics that give them high dose long-term antibiotic use, which is, and it does work for some of the women, but I see the ones that it's not working for, and their guts are decimated and they're still not resolving their symptoms. So they come to me really seeking support either alongside the antibiotics or to mop up the damage that's been done by them. And so, yeah, online seems to work really well.
So what would you say is the major sort of cause? I mean, it's really difficult to say, isn't it? But I mean, from what you've just said, presumably some people get into a cycle of, you know, there's an infection or a small infection which needs, but they feel they need antibiotics to get rid of it. And then they're in maybe a cycle. I mean, what is there, or is there another cause for people getting these things?
It's so tricky to say. I mean, with the bladder, there's so many different conditions going on there. You've got obviously your urinary tract infections, recurrent ones that go and come back again. And in those cases, yes, it can be that the antibiotics don't completely get rid of the bacteria, but there's a huge immune system response going on there as well. You need to look at epithelial tissue, the lining of the bladder, the urethra. You're looking at the microbiome of the vagina. Is there a reservoir of microbes in the vagina that is translocating to the bladder and causing problems there? So gut health, again, you know, 90% of my clients with both bladder and vaginal health conditions have had constipation for most of their lives. So we're looking at I'm really looking at the microbiome across all these places. Now, at the moment, it's quite hard to test the urinary microbiome. You can do it with a testing company in the States, but they only test, I think it's above 2%, and you get a very limited picture of what's actually going on there. So I look more at the vaginal microbiome, because we now have quite a lot of fabulous tests that either do quantitative PCR DNA testing or next generation sequence DNA testing. And that can really help to identify what might be going on in the vaginal space and the impact that that's having on the bladder itself. But when I'm looking at a client's list of what could be contributing, it's hormones, it's stress, it's gut health, it's dietary. You know, there are some instances where foods themselves are causing irritation. But is that the food, or is it the fact that the vagina, the bladder epithelial lining is damaged in some way, and therefore it's reacting to these foods? So it's a very wide sort of jigsaw puzzle. I guess it is with all the health conditions that we look at, isn't it? But I find with this, it really is quite a broad spectrum that I'm looking at to try and address all of these different parts of it.
Yeah, it's really interesting because... So as you say, it's such a wide spectrum of things that could go wrong. I mean, they could be systemic things, but or specific things that makes it quite difficult to get to the bottom of. So when you see a new patient or new customer, whatever you call them these days, what's the first sort of thing that you might look at? I mean, obviously, that's how wide is the it's a very wide spectrum, as we've discussed, but where do you start?
Always diet first, making sure that there's enough nutrients going in, there's enough protein going in, that they are, you know, balancing their energy. Because if they don't have enough energy to do what I'm asking them to do, you know, if they're feeling tired and fatigued all the time, it's going to be a lot harder. So I can't remember who it was that said it, but always look for the smallest thing that will make the biggest difference. And I always find that within the dietary side of it, I think. So I tweak that straight away. And then looking at...
Yeah, I think we can, as practitioners, can't we, get really sort of, because as you were alluding to there, there's quite a lot of fancy footwork you can do. But if you get caught up in the fancy footwork before you've actually just looked at the simple things, I mean, I think we're all at fault at that. You know, things like water, presumably, you know, hydration must be a big one.
And too much hydration. I get some clients coming to me where they're drinking up to 3 liters or over of water a day, and they complain of frequency and urgency. And it's like, well, I'm not surprised. And yes, there is irritation within the bladder as well. It's not that this is the only cause, but it's adding to it. And in fact, a client last week, I managed to get her down from over 3 liters to about, I think she said she was between 2.3 and 2.6 a day. And she said it took her about 3 or 4 days for her bladder to start feeling different. Like, it was a real change for her. She felt really uncomfortable for a little while. And then she said, I actually feel better. It doesn't feel as distended all the time. And she's spoken about how she's quite small, about how her bladder actually sort of swelled slightly before she needed to pass urine. And, you know, there was just so much water going in, poor thing. So, little things like that. But funnily enough, the water side of it, yes, getting people to drink more water. But normally these women are so far down the line, the urinary tract ones that I see, that they are, you know, that's one of the first things they get told by their doctors, is to drink more water.
But as you so rightly point out, it can be that they're drinking far too much water. You know, it's a big, big trend now, isn't it? This drinking masses of water thing. Yeah. I remember my parents, they pretty much never even drank water apart from drinking a hot drink, like a cup of tea. They never had any other hydration.
Yeah, no, definitely. But then I look at soothing and trying to soothe if there is irritation, if I think there's irritation going on, trying to soothe that. I generally try and get them to test, because I'm seeing them where they've already spent a huge amount of money on private practitioners and doctors, urologists, pelvic floor specialists. So I always think it's a good idea, if we're going to address this picture, to get some functional testing done so that we can really see what's happening with the microbiome, preferably gut and vagina if they can afford to, otherwise just vaginal, unless their vagina seems to be in the most perfect state of health, which is incredibly rare. Obviously, I wouldn't get somebody to test if it wasn't warranted, if they weren't showing signs of issues there. And then working on the microbiome as much as possible and really trying to shift it back into a more natural or beneficial state. So generally working on sort of lactobacilli strains of bacteria and improving the environment for the bacteria.
Okay, now this is a silly question, which is, where do you put these
So there is research that they do translocate orally, right. And I certainly get most women to consume them orally. And we're quite often, as I say, looking at gut health as well. So we want those bacteria to be working on the gut side of things as well. And particularly when we're looking at bladder health, we're hoping that there may be some translocation via the oral route, but otherwise, is it translating from the gut, from the anus, and then along to the vagina and the bladder that way? But I am asking them to use vaginal probiotics as pessaries, but only specific ones. They have to have a capsule that will dissolve very quickly and easily. It can't be a slow release capsule, and we have to make sure.
So do you use food? Sorry to be thick here, but could you use, are there specialized ones that actually are for popping, yeah. You know, yes. Up the old, you know, yes, so difficult for me. I'm of a certain generation where I don't like to be,
sorry,
kind of intimate terms, which is very coy of me, but anyway. So,
there are specific brands that are made. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say. Yeah. So Invivo's FemV is one that I use the most in my clinic. It dissolves very easily. It has Lactobacillus crispatus in it, which is one of our most beneficial microbes in the vaginal space. Unless you have too much of it, like anything in life, too much can be a bad thing as well. But somebody would notice very, very quickly if they had too much and they put this particular probiotic in, they'd feel burning and an irritation. So I am asking them to do quite a lot of things to their vagina to try and change the pH, because if we have an acidic space that the microbe can live in and be comfortable to live in, then it should be releasing lactic acid and hydrogen peroxide, and that creates this lovely space that the other microbes, hopefully the majority of them, are not so able to live in. Unfortunately, some of them still can.
Yeah, it's quite a very sensitive area, presumably. That you know, things like bathing and products of products you use in the bath and things like that obviously can really disturb that, can't they? Relatively easily. But yeah. if everything is healthy, does it return back to health relatively quickly? Let's say you had a bath with some dodgy bubble bath stuff. It can correct itself in the day unless you haven't got enough microbes. Is that right?
Or 2 to 3 days. So even if somebody has sex, the seminal pH is much more alkaline, and it can really throw off what's going on in the vaginal space in terms of the microbes being able to sort of get back to normal. So we sort of say around about 2 to 3 days for things to rectify themselves. Definitely no douching. You know, if you are having a bath with bubble bath in, definitely not sort of, you know, allowing it to get anywhere that it shouldn't really. The vagina does sort of shut itself properly. It has a sort of, the muscles are a bit like an H inside like that. So it shouldn't, too much shouldn't get in unless you're actually sort of allowing it to or helping it in there. But I'm actually just trying to create a downloadable PDF just on the really simplistic things like don't wash with soap, don't douche, don't drink too much water, do drink enough water. You know, the really simple little things that for people that can't afford to come and see me, that maybe they can just get a starting point on what they can do for their intimate health just to keep it in balance as much as they possibly can.
And do you think, I mean, that it's a sort of condition whereby it's got worse over time? I mean, meaning, is this something that let's say 20 years ago, we weren't really seeing, or perhaps we weren't really looking for? Or do you think it's got worse? And if so, why?
As far as I'm aware, there is written documentation of Egyptians talking about urinary tract infections quite a lot. So it's something that women have definitely suffered from, mostly women, some men do, for a very long time. Is it getting worse? I'm not sure about that. I can't answer that. There's definitely more understanding of things that you can do about it, certainly in terms of the change in hormones. So perimenopause and menopausal state, women are being more open about talking about this and understanding that they don't have to suffer in silence anymore. You know, because sometimes it can actually just be a structural issue that's causing a UTI type symptom. So when the pelvic floor is not as robust as it should be, or if it's too tight, those symptoms can actually be the same as a urinary tract infection. So that burning, frequency, urgency, all of those things. So I think there's definitely more being talked about it. Whether there's more women suffering from it though or not, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, it might be just a question of talking about it a little bit more than probably in past ages, as you can see from my reticence to discuss this.
Sorry, totally for seeing you on this one.
No, it's all right. Look, Kate, we're adults here, so we can.
We're adults. We can do it.
So yeah, so I'm interested in the hormonal side, which is, you know,
post-menopausal, yes.
One of those. So, you know, what happens in the menopause to cause, obviously, that drying up of estrogen, which obviously keeps everything running.
Kickstarter, isn't it? So, I mean, there's quite a few things that are going on. The drop in estrogen that happens in postmenopause, in peri, it's sort of, I believe, bouncing up and down a little bit, which is where you get the hot flushes and the shifts and changes in the hormonal patterns. The estrogen is connected to the lactobacillus. They have a strong relationship. And as the estrogen drops off, the lactobacilli drop off as well. And some women do sail into menopause, absolutely no problem, with a small amount of particularly lactobacillus gasseri is one that can survive at a slightly higher pH. It's a little bit more robust in a slightly more alkaline environment. And some women do just, you know, cope with that and it's absolutely fine. But there's also a decline in the plumpness of the tissue as well, and that therefore changes the structure a little bit. So you get atrophy happening, and as things shrink and change shape, because there are so many nerve endings in that area, that can cause pain sensations. But even the hormonal receptor sites that are within that area, and there's lots of different ones in the vulva, the vagina, and even internally, I believe, with sort of the bladder and stuff, that when the hormones are not being charged, I guess, when the hormone receptor sites are not being charged by the hormones, that can actually lead to pain sensations as well. So there's a huge amount that goes on with that. And I mean, I remember when I qualified 8 years ago, thinking HRT was the devil's work. And now I've seen women, you know, their symptoms completely rectified by the use of bioidentical hormones or estrogen pessaries. And it's always within part of a larger picture of what's going on, but it can make a massive difference. And I think that's a really important thing that we shouldn't be ignoring.
Well, absolutely. It's to be compassionate to that, I think, as well. And, you know, and you're right. It's that our clan can just throw the baby out with the bathwater to say, right, that's just the devil's work, you know, these pharmaceutical products. But used in effect in a dose specific way, I think that is the problem. I mean, I'm talking out of the top of my hat here, but the problem being that sometimes it's not dose specific. You know, in other words, people will just be put on HRT rather than the appropriate level of HRT because, you know, you don't need perhaps so much as, you know, you don't need just you know, so somebody can be 100, you know, like an 8-stone woman and a 10-20-stone woman, you know, obviously the doses wouldn't be appropriate for both. I think it's about that specificity. I'm having problems with my teeth today. And the actual, the dose specific, you know. And actually, I was at the conference. We were just talking about the conference, the functional medicine conference thing, whatever it was, just now. Literally talking about that, talking about using the bioidentical hormones at just like really small doses, specific to the person who you're giving the hormones to. So I think there's a lot of scope for using them in effect a dose specific way.
And testing, there's just not enough testing done around hormones. You're on it, there you go, your symptoms are better, we'll just keep you at this dose. And yeah, you know, there needs to be the blood works done or the urine hormone testing done or whatever it is that you're going to look at these levels and see if things are improving or not, and getting to the right point. I think it's also important. We have so much more understanding now about genetics and understanding if your cells are more sensitive to estrogen or not. And is that going to be an issue for you? So there's so many things that we can look at and support our clients from a functional point, even whilst they are using the more traditional methods of hormone replacement as well.
Yeah, but I mean, presumably it is then about transitioning those women out of using pharmaceuticals in the end to be, once you've got the base established and once you've got the health re-established, because a lot of that presumably would be from underlying other issues, like if there's a massive hormone imbalance. I mean, that's the way it's going, of course, you know, but that's a natural transition. But it's about taking somebody through that journey and getting to the point of health where they don't need these things, presumably. Or do you find that there are people who look, do you know what, they just need it forever?
Yeah. The estrogen, if it is to do with something like, for instance, vaginal atrophy, where they come off the HRT and it just, the pain starts up again, it's not a... or they can't retain the beneficial microbes, they can't retain the pH level that keeps them comfortable. But then others, it's as simple as once you've reduced some pathogenic microbes and sorted out the terrain, actually just twice a week they use a vaginal pessary of the lactobacilli strains, and they're fine. So it's there's no set rules with this at all. Yeah. It's very much dependent on the individual and working with them. I mean, I see clients for 3 months minimum, but I have some with me for up to over a year and a half, up to 2 years. And they may only be seeing me very occasionally towards their endpoint, but it's the constant tweaking and the constant checking up and the occasional flare that happens. Why has this happened? Oh, you've been in a really stressful situation, or you were traveling and you didn't drink enough, or whatever it might be. But it's helping them to understand their body and what is their trigger points, what are their trigger points, and how they can manage that ongoing.
Well, you know, I always say this, which must mean like I'm a bit of a one trick pony, which obviously is true. But, you know, when I was in clinic, I found the biggest thing was iodine deficiency. So luckily I would do iodine loading. And actually just once you've got the sort of basis of that, obviously you're keeping the pathogens in check through having adequate iodine, just sea greens, which is my top favorite, you know, nothing aggressive. Have you found that by chance, or
definitely iodine's a big component. And I think also if people haven't sorted their hormones out earlier on in life, you're going to have more problems as you go on further down the line. So it's generally, you know, and I do see a lot of younger women as well. And either they've been on the pill for quite a long time, or, you know, just their immune system was never robust enough, or they had poor gut health issues. But I'm always saying to them, you know, we need to sort your hormones out now as well, because it's really important as you carry on that they're balanced, because you'll have a much easier time later on.
Yes, no, definitely. So do you want to just take us through, you know, I'm sort of springing this on you rather, but sort of just a couple of, you know, sort of case histories that spring to mind of how you might kind of tackle, you know, how you tackled it and what happened in the end.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean,
they can be composite. They don't have to be.
They're also different. I mean, I have women coming to me with interstitial cystitis where nothing has been found, but it's a bit of a umbrella term like IBS. But in some cases, you know, they've stripped out their diet so much because they're on an IC diet. And actually, I spend a lot of my time just talking through with them how we can reintroduce foods and very gently and carefully getting more variety in. And quite often we'll end up with only one or two foods that they actually have a problem with. And then within that, their immune system improves, and we work a lot on, you know, working on the microbiome within that as well. There are some where they just, I'm not giving you a specific, sorry, am I? I'm not really answering your question.
No,
it's quite hard to pick a specific one. I mean, I had a new client this morning where she had a catheter put in at the birth of her second child, and everything stems from then. When she's had broth cultures done with a urologist, they have found E. coli, Streptococcus, and Aethosalis in there. So there is a microbial component, but for her, when she urinates, there's relief. So to me, that indicates it's the bladder lining. The bladder's emptying, and then the bladder feels okay for a little bit. And as it starts to fill up again, she's getting problems again. So we're going to be working a lot on trying to soothe the bladder lining whilst also working on those microbes as well. I'm getting her to look at pelvic floor specialists as well, just to make sure there's not a pelvic floor component in there. Working on her gut health because there's constipation issues, even though they've been improved, interestingly, by tiger nuts. So she started consuming tiger nuts, and she said it is amazing in terms of the fiber.
I've never heard of a tiger nut.
They're a Spanish, they're not a nut. I think they're also a legume, like a peanut.
Right.
And really fibrous. And she says, so long as she doesn't have too many, totally regular now. But that we've seen a gut test. She's already had one done, and she's got a heavy dose of methane producing bacteria in there, which would slow down the motility. So whilst working on the bladder microbiome, I'll also be working on the gut microbiome. We're going to be looking at her hormones. Her hormones are a bit all over the place as well. And really looking at her nervous system as well. The majority of these women, they're in a real state because they've not been heard. They've not been listened to. They've been told it's in their heads. There's nothing there. We can't find anything on culture, or just keep taking these antibiotics and, you know, it's not solving your symptoms, where you just need more. So really soothing the nervous system. There's a lot of brain fog that comes with UTIs as well. So really trying to help with liver clearance and just sort of cognitive function herbs as well. So there's a lovely product, I can't remember who it's by now, but it's called Cognitive Function. And it really seems to help just clear things and brighten the brain a little bit as well. So yeah, that doesn't really answer your question at all, does it?
No, it doesn't. No, it is also, actually, I'm just interested, you said soothe the bladder. What sort of strategies do you use for that?
So high dose aloe vera capsules, the research was done by the company that makes the aloe vera capsules. So obviously, you know, you have to take it with a large pinch of salt, but so many women see improvements with this really high dose of aloe vera that seems to soothe the gag layer, that sort of external layer within the bladder. Looking at teas that help, so corn silk tea, and I get them to drink a garlic tea as well. I'm quite mean, but if they put a squeeze of lemon in it, it's not too bad. And actually a lot of them really quite like it. And just recently there's been, it's dying off now, but sticky willow. Do you remember the stuff in the garden that sticks to your trousers?
Oh, yes.
That's actually really good for your bladder and for your lymph system. And so I get them to sort of make tea with that, or to make a water with it if it's available to them, or you can buy it off the internet. So these little things that will, even nettle will help, although it is a slight diuretic. So if they're already have a lot of frequency, you need to be obviously a bit careful with that. But it can help with lowering sort of the histamine reaction that's happening, because there is a microbial component. There is going to be a mast cell reaction happening because of those microbes, and therefore there is a sort of slight histamine issue going on. So lowering that a little bit. With a particular client this morning, I'm going to be looking at P, which I can never pronounce the full name of, because there's a lot of nerve pain going on with her as well. So I'm hoping that that might sort of help to reduce that down a little bit. And always looking at methylation as well, and making sure that the cellular repair is actually happening properly, that things are working properly. Vitamin D, hugely important for that tissue integrity, but also hormones and immune system as well. So quite a few.
Yeah, no, it's obviously specific to the person. I mean, obviously that's our middle name, isn't it, when we do all of these things. But do you find that I mean, it's difficult to say really, but do you find that diet can be helpful in its own right, or do you feel that, you know, generally speaking, the supplements are the things that, you know, you can really see the substantial difference in?
Sadly, I wish I could do this by a diet alone, but it's impossible. It's the supplements. And most people come to me on quite a good diet. Most people have already seen other health practitioners in the past, or they have spent a lot of time Googling and being in Facebook groups where people are saying eat this and eat that and get enough protein in. But I certainly need to tweak it with them. It's quite nice actually, occasionally, when I get someone, I'm like, oh, we need to totally rectify your diet.
Yeah, are you feeling all right? No, well, brilliant. You know, this is a vegetable.
Yeah, that happens very rarely, unfortunately. It's much more about additional. So I look a lot at anti-inflammatory foods and getting them to eat a lot of cruciferous, so long as they can tolerate it, and for the sulforaphane, and, you know, really just maxing out on healthy fats, and, you know, just all the little tweakings. And iodine, I get them to powder up. I mean, the sea greens you're talking about are lovely, but I just get them to powder up nori sheets and to sprinkle them into their food as a sort of, so it's a condiment as well. It adds flavor and umami to a dish. But no, sadly, the supplements really are, I'd love to be able to just say, here's two or three, a multi and some magnesium and off you go. But it's, you know, these are people that have, they really have reached the end of the road, and they've hit a wall, I should say, rather. And we have to do a lot of shifting to be able to bring them back to any sort of balance. And sometimes it works completely and they go off and they are completely symptom free. But the majority of the time it is about management of reducing the symptoms so that their day-to-day life is better, and that they can work and they can walk and, you know, do the simple things, or perhaps even have sex again. Most of them come to me not, you know, having any intimate relationship with their partner for well over a year, if not longer, because it's painful. And so, you know, that's a big goal, is always to break down that barrier with them and to help them to nurture that part of their relationship back a little bit, if that's possible. But like I say, sometimes it can take a very, very long time to get them back. I think, you know, if I can shift a microbiome in 3 months to a healthy state, that's a really good day's work, or 3 months day's work. It's more like 6 months to a year. Generally, I find that is the real changes are happening around about 3 months to 6 months, but it takes longer to really keep it at a stable point.
So presumably somebody has to be quite, you know, obviously they are motivated to make that change, but it's, you know how it is, it's difficult to get somebody to buy into something for that long, isn't it?
Yeah. So I only ask them to buy in for 3 months, although I do offer a 6 month package as well. And I'd say probably about 40% of my clients buy into the 6 month package, because they know that it's going to take a long time. But they could, otherwise they come back sort of ad hoc afterwards. And sometimes I've given them enough information that they can buffer the changes that are happening to themselves with what I've told them to do, and they can sort of monitor it. So, you know, and there are some that they are, I don't want to say fixed, I'm not allowed to say fixed, are they? Their symptoms are resolved and they are so much better, and they leave happy, you know, but it's probably about sort of 20 to 30% where it's actually, you know, they go and it's done. It's much more that it's a longer ongoing process, but they know that. They know that when they start with me, I always offer a discovery call, and a free one, and we chat about, you know, how long they've been ill for, how ill they are, in a very brief moment of you know, conversation. And then I explain about how long it will take for their symptoms to really rectify, and in some cases that it is just management of getting them to a more comfortable place. And quite often they're happy with that. They just want to be more comfortable. They want to be in less pain and able to live their lives more normally. So yeah, it's a difficult one for sure.
So how many sort of people stick with the program? That sort of, you've got the sort of 6 months
ongoing
and 3 months.
They're in it, they tend to be really, they do stick with it. And even the ones that sign up for 3 months quite often then sign up for more smaller packages to continue or ad hoc sessions. A few don't, but the majority do. There are the odd one where they're constantly, you know, it's that, there's a word term for it, isn't it? Constantly searching for the next practitioner to fix them. But the majority have already done that by the time they get to me. So it's a bit more, they are really invested and really grateful the majority of the time for somebody listening and supporting them through it. And sometimes it's a realization that actually nutrition is, although we, you know, we've sorted the diet and actually it's structural and they need somebody else.
Yeah.
I'm constantly referring on to other people for therapy, for acupuncture, for structural work. And sometimes they realize that actually once they do that, the structural side of it is helping more and that's where they want to put their money in. And that's great, you know.
Yeah, so you know, you mentioned pelvic floor and all of that side. So there are things that people can do through exercise, and in effect, it's not a total malfunction of the something that doesn't allow them to get well. Do you see what I mean? It's not a total physical malfunction. They can get better through exercise.
That's a hard one, but yes, generally I think there are some that it is, if it's too tight, they can learn to loosen it slightly. So they find a lot of yoga teachers are actually the muscles are just too tight, too rigid, right, and can cause pain around the vulva area and including the bladder as well. So there's a lot of
because I think there's a lot of fear in a way about around, especially ladies who've had children, around leakage. You know, maybe is that an issue? I mean, where they've literally gone, bloody hell, I don't want that to be me, and done so many of the pelvic floor exercises, they've gone the other way on it.
Yeah, and you can have both tight and loose pelvic floor, I believe. It's so complicated, and it's definitely not that, part of it is not my specialism. I do refer on to that, but I think that, you know, there are a few people where, particularly if they have constipation and the bowel is pushing onto the vagina and onto the bladder, that can be causing problems. And if that's been going on all their life, you know, that there are structural issues within there that can be perhaps maneuvered or not helped, but, you know, improved. Whether it will solve the problem completely is a different matter. But the trouble is, once you change anything within the structure of the bladder and you change the composition, if the bladder's not emptying properly, if there's urine left within the bladder, you start setting up a reservoir for microbes that are not being flushed through and cleared. And so that's a problem that can occur in terms of learning to empty your bladder correctly. There's so many different things that can come with the structure.
Yeah, I mean, just as you're thinking, talking there, I'm thinking even something like sleep could really affect, couldn't it? Because if you're then waking up in the night and thinking you need to have a wee, you know, or people who hold on in the night as well, you know, either or.
Yeah, either or, definitely. Children that hold on at school because they're not allowed to go outside of their lesson times, and, you know, they don't want to go holding, you know, withholding stools all day. So again, you're getting this build up. All these problems can really have a massive impact on what's going on, both microbiome and structurally wise.
So as we're closing, what would you sort of say to people who probably haven't looked at this area in terms of practice, you know, some you know, I mean, obviously from what you've said, it's obviously incredibly individualistic, isn't it? You know, you're looking at anything from constipation, you're looking at hormones, you're looking at all these different components. What would you say somebody tackling this area, how should they begin?
If you're a woman, test your own vaginal microbiome. really good place to start and get to understand that.
Now you were saying, did you say Invivo did those tests?
Invivo do a brilliant test because it has an inflammatory marker on it. I believe it might be possibly the only one with an inflammatory marker on it. There are other companies out there that do slightly different type of testing. So I use a broad range of tests depending on what it is that I'm looking at. Certainly for older women postmenopausal, I find Invivo is one very useful because of that inflammatory marker. If you're looking at DIV, which I again cannot pronounce without the words in front of me, disquamative something or other vaginitis, then it's you want to know if there's inflammation going on in there because that's going to be a big component of it. But otherwise, there's American tests called Unibio. There's one in the UK called ScreenMe. There's several other ones in America. There's the Microgen DX one, which is the one that I'm not so fond of simply because it doesn't test under 2%. And I feel like there's a lot of low-level microbes that when you add them up, actually, they become a large part of what's going on in there. And then there's various other tests over in the in Australia and I think New Zealand as well. So yeah, there's a broad range of tests out there, but Invivo do a brilliant, they have a brilliant education team with them that will actually talk you through your test results. So if you're not sure what you're doing, they will help you with that, which I think is quite important. There's also a lady called Maura Bradfield, who I studied under, who runs an intermittent ecology course that she does in New Zealand, but it's worldwide via Zoom. And that's another really great place to learn from. I've learned most of it through her or Invivo. And I found her through Invivo. So,
well, I'm sort of impressed that you've taken this on as a one-woman mission to write the microbiome of all of us through what you're doing. So, but presumably it's very rewarding and you know, you can, you know, when somebody, I should think when somebody is well in this area, I imagine that it's magic that you solve the problem.
It is wonderful when they get better. It is absolutely fantastic. It is probably one of the most difficult areas to work in. I certainly fell into it by accident. I did not choose this path. I think vaginal health is a lot easier to fix than bladder health. Bladder health tends to be really quite a tricky one.
I presume it's much more entrenched in what, I mean, that's, I'm just thinking it's kind of because
much,
it's
hard
sort
to get
of almost, well, yeah, much harder to get to. And it's kind of like, well, actually the bladder's like, you know what, I'm a bladder, I'm not letting anything in here. So much, much more difficult, but still. So if anybody wants to get a hold of you, Kate, for patients of theirs, you know, maybe they feel a little bit out of their depth on it and actually would prefer just to get them to get in touch with you directly, or they want to have a chat, how do people get hold of you?
I've got a website, which is www.katewaters.co.uk. So you can contact me through that. My email is nutrition@katewaters.co.uk. I'm on Instagram as well. I try and post stuff on there, not that often. I also run cooking courses as well, because I used to be a chef before I trained as a nutritional therapist. So,
Wow. Well, we should have spoken about that. Where's cooking courses where?
No, so that's online. I do it with a lady called Amanda Archibald, who is a nutrigenomics specialist, and she brings the science about nutrigenomics and I translate it into the kitchen. So we have a couple of courses that you can see through my website. The public one's about to launch again in September, and we're hoping to get a really nice practitioner package going in the future as well,
which would be amazing. And when you do that, you know, come back to the network and we'll help you get that out there.
Lovely, thank you.
Yes, all right, well, with that we say thank you so much to Kate and her tales of the tales of intimate health, which actually do sound fascinating. So thank you so much. And you forget how really, I mean, I have a friend who's a man at the moment who's suffering terribly from, I think, from bladder problems. Mm-hmm. So actually from the fair, I gave him a supplement somebody gave me, just, you know, and actually it seems to have done something, but getting in touch if you ever do see men. Because he really is suffering, poor thing. I'll tell him about you, and so look out for a bloke, because if he arrives, you'll know it's him, won't you?
I do get men occasionally. I do work with them as well.
Oh yeah, you're not going to turn them away at the door. Okay. Marvellous. All right. With that, we say thank you so much, Kate, and to everybody listening, good night. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate.